Welcome to Safety Spectrum, your environmental health and safety connection. This program is a presentation of the Michigan Safety Conference. For almost a century, the annual conference has provided credible educational opportunities and valuable support to the safety and health practitioner by offering 120 instructional programs, along with exhibits highlighting the latest in safety equipment, instrumentation, and demonstrations. To learn more about the conference, please find us at MICH safetyconference.org.
Welcome to Safety Spectrum. I'm your host, Sheila Ide. This program is sponsored by the Michigan Safety Conference, and our topic today is caring for healthcare workers. Providing healthcare workers with a safe and healthy workplace is as important as the care they provide their patients. Our speaker today will discuss the tools Munson Healthcare uses to achieve this goal. John Boldy is the System Safety and Security Director for Munson Healthcare and has oversight for the safety, security, and emergency management of 7 hospitals, multiple clinics, and services for over 8,000 employees. He's been with Munson Healthcare for over 20 years and is a certified healthcare safety professional. He is also the past president of the Michigan Healthcare Safety Association, which supports healthcare safety throughout the state of Michigan. He is also the 2022 recipient of the Michigan Safety Conference Professionals of the Year Safety Award. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing well, Sheila. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Appreciate your talking with us today. You just had a little bit of a disaster up in the northern region where you're from, up in Gaylord, the tornado.
Yeah, we did. Fortunately, the hospital wasn't hit, but that community was hit hard by the tornado back on the Friday the 20th. It happened about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So how did that affect your hospital? I'm sure you were up there.
Well, we activated incident command locally at that hospital, Otsego Memorial Hospital, part of the Munson Healthcare system. And then we also activated the system incident command, and I was a part of that. So we set up communication systems between the two command centers and the hospital emergency department was hit really hard with an onslaught of patients, and it was difficult to get to the hospital for patients and ambulances and even employees who were trying to come in and get help. And then the County Emergency Operations Center opened up, and the emergency department manager from OMH went to the county EOC and served as kind of the communication link between the EOC and the hospital. And I know that that was very, very helpful.
Were you able to handle all the patients at that hospital, or did they have to be transported to other places?
Yeah, some of them were transported to our Grayling Hospital and some to the medical center here in Traverse City. And then some went over to McLaren in Petoskey.
So your territory goes as far south as Cadillac, I believe?
Yeah, Cadillac and Manistee is actually the furthest south and over to Frankfort and Grayling, Gaylord, and Charlevoix. Probably missing one or two, but Kalkaska, of course, and Cadillac.
So you're stationed in Traverse City yourself, right?
Well, I try to get out to all the hospitals as often as I can, but COVID has really restricted that. But I'm getting back to getting out there as much as possible.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit. So explain a little bit, but could you explain the responsibilities and challenges as the safety and security director? You've got both titles plus emergency management.
Yeah. It's I have to say, and I was thinking about this on the way to work today, I really do love my job. And that is because Northern Michigan is obviously a great place to live and raise a family. But Munson Healthcare is by far my best employment experience. I worked at hospitals in Chicago before my wife and I moved up here about 22 years ago, and Munson just truly is a great place to work, and it's because of the people that we work with, the teams that we put together to address the challenges that we face, and the quality, the caliber of people that work at Munson Healthcare, really across the system. It makes it a pleasure, and it is all about team. I mean, you are talking about my accomplishments and my responsibilities, but there's no way that those could happen without the teams that I work with across the system and at the medical center.
As you said, the communication was kind of strained with all the activity from the COVID patients, and that I suppose you were hit pretty bad, just like everyone else.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have a pandemic plan that goes from green to all the way to red. And there was a point when we were in that red zone based on the positivity rates and the amount of patients that we were hospitalized with COVID. So, and then that the levels changed based on those, that positivity rate. And we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel like everyone else is, but then more recently an uptick in hospitalizations and that positivity rate. So constantly evaluating, you know, what needs to change. Our visitor policies, our masking policies have been pretty consistent through COVID. You know, visitation, the health screening, all those things that have been difficult for our patients and their loved ones, and, you know, constant changes and really having to be flexible and adaptable.
What type of situations lead to confrontation and possible workplace violence issues at the hospital?
Well, yeah, I think hospitals were dealing with workplace violence well before COVID. And like most hospitals, we've seen a significant uptick in violence ranging from verbal aggression to physical aggression and that whole gamut. And I think our teams are doing a better job of reporting. So that's part of the reason that we saw an increase. But from calendar year 20 to calendar year 21, we saw over 200% increase in reported incidents of violence. And that's consistent across the system. You know, some hospitals a little more, some hospitals a little less, but across the entire system and even in our outpatient settings, we saw a significant increase in frustration, rudeness, the kinds of challenges that I think were not quite the same before COVID. You know, it has really been a frustrating time, 2 years of everybody dealing with this huge impact situation. And we've had to institute things like different kinds of education and training programs, really on that de-escalation continuum and situational awareness, because employee safety is obviously one of our top priorities, and our employees need to feel safe when they come to work, and we're committed to that. So I'd say we've done quite a bit in terms of offering a robust training and education program to deal with that increase in violence and that verbal aggression and, you know, even the physical altercations.
So, do you think it's all, has it just happened since the pandemic, or has this been slowly becoming more of an issue?
It was definitely on the rise before COVID, but COVID amplified it.
I think you also mentioned when we talked about substance abuse and issues with the homeless or...
Yeah, and again, those were the things that we were dealing with before COVID, and I think, like I said, COVID amplified some of those situations, but I think everybody's frustration level seems to have kind of decreased, and so people are less tolerant of things that would normally they'd be able to handle. So that anxiety that people come to a hospital or a clinic with, not knowing what their outcomes are going to be, or test results, or, you know, surgeries, loved ones in the hospital, all the things that make people anxious were just kind of exacerbated by frustrations like the visitor policy, the limits and the number of people who could come in and see their loved ones, and having to mask, having to pass that health screening process. It was hard. It was hard for everybody.
So did you find that the employees were also being affected by this and changing the way they felt about the work and their jobs? And how did you address that?
So, you know, we have a remarkable, really remarkable healthcare team, and very, very committed to serving our community and the patients and giving them top quality care while they're in our facilities. I think it's tough for everybody to be the focus of people's frustration, but we're a small community. You know, or a series of small communities around the Grand Traverse region and all the way up the areas that I talked about earlier. But, you know, you may be treating someone you know, and we have family members, but given these small communities, people know people who know people. We've had remarkable support, just remarkable support from our communities. And I know that some hospitals, that support has waned over the last 2 years, and we're really fortunate. We still get donations from people out in the community for food. We have this, we have the best ice cream in Traverse City. And
there may be a debate on that.
Yeah. So our community members have bought, you know, ice cream for the entire team a couple days recently. And, you know, those kinds of gestures go a long way. And we're pretty lucky to have that kind of support. We are.
Are you having a little bit of the turnover that some of the hospitals down south are having? Are people retiring early, or you think you've pretty much kept your staff intact?
Well, we are seeing retirements. We're seeing some early retirements, and there are certain job categories that are tougher than others to fill. We're not alone in that. Every hospital is dealing with those struggles, but we have a lot of longevity here throughout Munson Healthcare System, and we're fortunate to have that. And we're also committed to retaining good employees and recruiting good employees. So lots of efforts going into both of those areas.
I suppose you're selling Traverse City, you know, for me, it'd be the vineyards, you know, that's why I want to go.
Yeah, the vineyards and the breweries and the restaurants and
Moomer's ice cream.
Good friendly people and water everywhere. So
we talked a little bit about, you know, teaching people to de-escalate. So what kind of training programs do you have for folks to deal with the increased frustration levels, I guess?
Yeah, so one of the things we offered, and we started offering that when we saw that uptick start to happen with, you know, verbal aggression. And there's a lot of, we've always used the CPI model, Crisis Prevention Institute. We've used it for over 20 years. It's, I would say, one of the best programs that are out there. And we've made a condensed version of what can be a 6 to 7 hour class. And we've offered like lunch and learns where we teach de-escalation and we tie in self-care, which I think is part of what we're talking about today, and self-awareness. It's important to know what we bring to a situation so we're not worsening the situation unconsciously. And then the de-escalation strategies that can range from, you know, just redirecting somebody, setting limits appropriately, or distracting that can be helpful, or disengagement is a really a powerful way. And you can do that with your words. You can do that, you know, by just simply stepping back to kind of distance yourself from maybe the intensity of an interaction. So lots of tools and strategies on that front. And then, of course, we teach safety planning. So assessing your area, your work area, for things that could be used as weapons or barriers that might help in certain situations, and being mindful of your surroundings, that situational awareness, that's so important no matter where you are.
I'm finding myself doing that when I go someplace. I'm looking around for weapons, or I always look for exits, because we're safety people. We always look for exits with a door, our path out, and I can pick up this chair and throw it right now. You know, that's
right. I kind of liken it to driving. So when we're driving, we're looking out that front windshield. We're looking in the rear view mirror. We're looking in the side mirror, left side, right side, and so we've got almost a 360 awareness going on, and we want to have that same vigilance when we're walking to and from our cars, or when we're in a situation that looks like it could escalate. You want to know what your exits are. You want to know if somebody's coming from the side or behind you. So we talk a lot about that 360 degree situational awareness and making note of changes in the environment, things along those lines.
Do people feel comfortable reporting suspicious behavior, or are they becoming more aware of it? I mean,
I think our data supports that people are reporting more. We always support and use the, you know, see something, say something. We get the direct line to security out there so people know who to call. We encourage people to call ahead of time when things start or look like they might be going in a negative direction. And the different ways that we can call for help, that can be, you know, calling a coworker, calling your manager or your supervisor, calling security, and in those really challenging situations, calling 911. So encouraging people to ask for help, because sometimes we can be reluctant to do that.
Yeah, you said that you had a 200% increase of reports of incidents. Yes. So I'm assuming that's one of your metrics to show that this is working. People feel comfortable reporting things.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did the limitations on visitors during the pandemic affect all your operations? That must have been very frustrating for both patient and nurses and doctors, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. Because we all know how important family and loved ones and visiting us are when we're in a hospital. It's a part of the healing process, and we know that. So very difficult decisions had to be made at certain points within the pandemic. And of course, nobody likes that. But in early on, we were encouraging people to use iPads to communicate with their loved ones. It's sort of the next best thing to being there. Whenever we could open visitation back up based on clinical decisions, we would do that because we know how important it is. But definitely a frustrator for our communities, for our patients, for our loved ones, and for staff as well.
Yeah, I think you mentioned you often were able to do a case-by-case analysis of who could come in, and especially end of life type of things.
End of life situations, definitely. We made modifications there and exceptions when we could. And with our maternity units, you know, making, we had some, a little bit more flexibility there, because obviously it's important to have your partner there when you're delivering a baby, and some people had doulas. And so we were looking at all of that very closely, and through the clinical lens and through the operational lens. And that was really helpful to make that distinction, clinical decisions, and then how do we operationalize those decisions?
I didn't ask you this before, but were you able to get the PPE that you needed for everyone and be able to stand?
We were fortunate. Yeah, thank you for bringing that back. It seems like it's way back when, but there was that time when everybody was struggling to get N95s and the right masks available, and we were kind of down to the wire, and then the floodgate opened up, and we haven't had issues with stocking PPE since then.
I think your community support really helps too.
Definitely.
Now, have you got situations where people have to work alone, or how do you handle that?
We really try to avoid that. And if you know, if somebody's working alone or somebody has to go into a room alone with a patient that they might have concerns about, we definitely want to promote that safety planning and awareness for people outside the, you know, outside the room. But we do our best to not have staff members working alone, especially, you know, after hours, that kind of thing. So we work with our staffing plans and ratios and all that, and try really hard not to have that situation happen too often.
I've seen some hospitals where they actually have a system where they know where everyone is. They wear a badge and they can kind of track where people are in the hospital. Do you have such a system?
We do. On our behavioral health unit, we have a system called Versus, and we have that available in other parts of the hospital too, in our emergency department, and we're trying to expand that system. It's kind of a wireless notification system badge that can easily be tracked and activated if you find yourself in a difficult situation. So, yep, those are really, really important and helpful tools.
Technology is kind of catching up. I remember back in the day, I had people working alone in senior situations and basically had to use your phone. I'm going in, coming out, and you know, fortunately, some of the technology has gotten better than that.
Yeah, so we're installing security cameras in places where we see more frequent challenges, and panic alarms under the desk, or handheld panic alarms.
You know, you've kind of talked about it already, but some places reported that the support of the public has kind of waned, as we were talking a little earlier, and personnel felt, you know, threatened a little bit, that people weren't taking the COVID or these diseases seriously, and they were taking it out on the healthcare workers. So you didn't really see much of that then. I understand.
Not as much as other communities have. And we've got, I think, being smaller communities, we feel that support more directly and more consistently. And there's a lot of gratitude for the healthcare team and what we do and how challenging this last couple of years have been.
I think you said that you had some community outreach programs too.
Community outreach programs on the security front, or refresh my memory on that.
Does the hospital meet with the community, you know, on a regular basis?
In fact, yeah. We just had a meeting today. Thanks for refreshing my memory. We try to meet as often as possible. We have quarterly meetings with community agencies that see the same kinds of challenges. The behavioral health patient population, the substance abuse population, and we try to work on the challenges that we see with those groups as a community. So we've got our community mental health at the table, and local law enforcement, the folks who work with the homeless population, and we work together to find community solutions, not just healthcare focused solutions, but it really does help because we interface so regularly with these different services. So it's important that we know who to reach out to. It's important that we have proactive relationship building kinds of forums, and that people know that if there's something, an issue or concern that comes up, they know who to reach out to, and that we can deal with things constructively and directly. And that's really, really been a helpful forum and a great place to kind of unite our forces and deal with these challenges as a community. So, and it's funny you just mentioned that, because we did just have a meeting, and we had the best participation we've had. We're trying to expand it out to our entire region. So law enforcement from different counties, behavioral health experts from different areas, and of course, hospital representation from all of the hospitals in the system.
Yeah, I know there's frustration sometimes with mental illness and substance abuse where people don't know where to go. They can't get the treatment that they need. So you're reaching out to the community, and the community talking with you definitely shows the resources that are out there. Just being able to refer somebody.
Right, exactly. And then everybody's dealing with the lack of inpatient bed availability for behavioral health individuals in crisis who need hospitalization, and so they end up in our emergency rooms for extended stays that are really not the best place. And so working together on how we can come up with solutions to help alleviate those pain points.
Well, this is probably kind of a redundant question in a way, but have you had to change your approach based on the last few years?
Yeah, lots of changes. That's a great question. There's all kinds of ways I think that we've adapted to the changes and that COVID has brought about us, but even prior to COVID, we've learned to be very nimble. I think we've learned, I talked about earlier, but clinical decisions and challenges are addressed in the clinical arenas with the clinical experts, and in how those decisions get operationalized are really the problem solving and the forward thinking and the planning that goes into changes happens with folks who are operational experts and the supply companies, food and nutrition, you know, environmental services, all the support services that we have that help to make changes go as smoothly as possible. We rely heavily on our corporate communications folks for communicating internally and externally when we have to make big changes that would affect our communities, like the visitor policies and things along those lines. So definitely team effort and relying on the people with the best expertise. So.
Yeah, and I think when we've talked, they really put the patients first. And I mean, sometimes I think the workers sacrifice themselves to be sure that they're giving the best care that they can. I know you said that several times when we talked.
Yeah, so thank you for pointing that out. We have what we call True North, and there's four quadrants to True North. And this is for the whole system. It's kind of our guiding principles, but patients are at the center. So it constantly reminds us that whatever we do, whatever our roles or responsibilities, no matter if we're a nurse at the bedside or a person in accounting or a unit clerk or security officer, we all have a part in taking care of our patients. However, every one of our employees is equally as important. Their safety is equally as important. So when we talk about safety, which is one of the quadrants, we talk about patient safety and employee safety, side by side, not one more than the other, because you can't have one without the other. So we've done a lot of work over the years to help people value their own safety as much as they value our patient's safety. And I think we've come a long way with that. And I do think that True North has helped us to really hone in on and bring focus into that. And safety is one of the organization's core values. It's one of our organizational metrics. We want to keep driving down our serious safety employee injuries. So we take employee safety very, very seriously and really try to empower our employees to use the tools and the strategies that we give them every day and to keep their safety in the forefront and their coworkers' safety in the forefront, just like patient safety.
So what do you have available for the employees that are feeling the stresses and they need to step away? What kind of help do you give them?
Yeah, so obviously we have a employee assistance program, and we've got classes. We've in our monthly leadership meetings, our behavioral health folks bring in tools and strategies for self-care. We're constantly promoting that from our presidents and hospital presidents. Through the system, that it's enormously important to take care of yourself so that you can take care of the patients. In our de-escalation classes, like I said earlier, we start the class off, let's talk about self-care. How do you take care of yourself? What are the things that bring you joy? And how do you practice that to counterbalance the intensity of the work? So constantly reminding our employees how important they are, how much we need them, and how much we value them, their safety and their health. It's kind of a daily mantra in all different forms.
Well, what you said in the beginning, where during this disaster, which you described like a war zone up in Galen, pretty horrible, and your people were fighting to get to the hospital to serve.
Right.
It's like
right.
We always say about police, fire, and healthcare. They're running in the building when we're all running out.
Right. Yeah. That's, we need this. It's pretty remarkable. I keep saying that word, but it is. It's.
Do you have any advice for other healthcare professionals on successes and lessons learned?
Well, so we're talking about self-care, so we've got to do that ourselves. We have to take care of ourselves if we expect to teach and encourage others to do the same. So, what are the things that bring us happiness and joy? How do we cultivate our friends and our family and enjoy the outdoors and find things that bring us meaning and joy in life? We know a lot of our people get that at work and also at home and in this beautiful place that we live. So walking the walk, talking the talk, being good role models, but it's you know, probably one of the most important things, taking good care of yourself. And some people do that through meditation. Some people do it through mindfulness. Some people do it through prayer, exercise. There's all different ways. And it's just important that we find the ways that work best for ourselves.
And you believe Munson's philosophy is making sure people have the outlets that they need to live their best life.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, you said something when I asked.
Work in an environment like that, and I know there are a lot of good hospitals out there and healthcare systems, and we're not alone in the challenges that we're facing. And things like the Michigan Healthcare Safety Association, the Michigan Safety Conference that brings safety professionals from so many different walks of life and employment, you know, different disciplines. That's where we get fed. That's where we learn new things. And those kinds of things bring energy to all of us, and networking and building new relationships. All of this feeds who we are and what we do, and makes it all that more meaningful.
I think when I asked you why this topic was important, you said something about COVID-19 will always be with us one way or another.
Yeah, yeah. It's had a huge impact on all of us. We will never forget it, that's for sure. And we know it's lingering on in different forms and manifestations. And, you know, we're learning to deal with it in a new norm kind of way. So there's lots of great learning that's happened in the course of this, you know, shared experience. So I don't think it's going away in a way that we'll ever forget it.
I think you said earlier that being nimble is being
nimble.
Well, with the change and communicate.
right.
So okay. Got any other final thoughts for us right now?
I think you tapped me out. I think I
you appreciate your employees and you appreciate the public and customer service.
Yeah, and we appreciate people like you, Sheila. It's been really fun getting to know you. And I was, you know, the Michigan Safety Conference, I was reminded, and you know, how good it was to get together with people again, but also the value of that conference and the amount of volunteerism that goes into making that conference
amazing. Such
a huge success.
Amazing. Yeah.
Such a great place for safety professionals of all kinds, getting together and sharing best practices and not afraid to share vulnerabilities and learn from one another and grow from one another. And it's a really important place with some awesome people driving that every year.
That's key.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we've learned, communication, education, and preparation are some of the tools healthcare systems can rely on to support their employees. Yeah. Along understanding the mental toll this work demands and providing a safe place when needed. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to thank you, John, for joining us today. John Boldy can be reached at jboldy@mhc.net. If you'd like more information about the conference or even be a guest on the podcast, please come and get in touch with us at michsafetyconference.org. Thank you for listening to Safety Spectrum. This is Sheila Ide.